1551 for your text. And you can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. And seeing we mentioned it, we might as well play one.
It's there you go. Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Wash your hands. Now, good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? How was the weekend? Mixed bag when it came to the weather. I was out running this morning and I've been meeting these two ladies every morning. And they've been getting happier and happier. And they've been saying, good morning, Ray. Good morning, Ray. You know, and it was lovely, lovely. Anyway, this morning they stopped. And I had thought that I knew one of the women. I thought that she was a neighbour of ours. Luckily, I didn't say anything because she wasn't, as it turns out. But they have a story. They stopped me because they wanted to share with me that at the beginning of the lockdown, that they could only run 100 metres. And that's okay if you're Usain Bolt and you're doing it, you know, in less than 10 seconds. But they could only run 100 metres at any pace. Anyway, they got out every morning, one pushing the other and the other pushing the other. And now they're up to 10K. That's in the space of 3 months. And they were so delighted with themselves and so happy. And we had a little conversation about the benefits that have accrued to them because of the running. And they were telling they've more energy. It sets them up for the day, smiles on their faces, all of those things. So I just want to say hello to Vanessa and Evelyn. And well done you. Well done you on starting that and sticking with it and spotting the benefits of it. And it's a head benefit. It's not a weight benefit. It's not a waist benefit. It's a head benefit. And I've been trying to share that message for a long time. Anyway, Vanessa and Evelyn are living proof of the benefits of running, and well done. Well, we're on physical activity. Eamon Ryan, leader of the Green Party. Now, if the programme for government is sort of rolled out as we expected, there's going to be great news for cyclists all over the country. They're going to improve cycle paths. They're going to build new ones. It started already, partly because of the lockdown. And people will be avoiding public transport and cars, and more people have bought bikes, and partly because there's going to be a green element to the programme for government. That's if it all happens on Friday, and if we have an announcement on Saturday. Anyway, I noticed it last week and maybe the week before, and I didn't say anything, but Eamon Ryan, would you not wear a helmet? Now, I know under law you don't have to wear a helmet, but it's advised that you do. And when people are talking to young people, they're saying, wear a helmet, be visible, wear a high-vis vest when you're cycling, stay safe, all that sort of thing. And here you have the man who is an advert for cycling, but he's not wearing a helmet. First few times I saw him, I thought maybe he has the helmet in the bag and that they caught him off guard, or they asked him to go in and get the bike and come back out and stage him arriving at government buildings. But I've seen a few of them now and he never wears a helmet in anything I saw over the last few weeks. So come on, Eamon Ryan, come on. You're a role model, whether you like it or not, for cyclists. So wear a feckin' helmet, will you? I've done that. Now, that's off my chest. Were you watching any of the football over the weekend? I didn't realise they were going to be dubbing in crowd sounds. It sort of took me by surprise on Saturday night. I tuned in. BBC were covering Bournemouth and Crystal Palace. And empty stadium, obviously, because of the situation we're in and social distancing and all that. But yet there was crowd noises. It was very odd. And then there must have been a man or a woman with a selection of various crowd noises, because as one team approached the goals, there was like, yeah, and then if there was no goal or anything, it died down. And then there was just a murmur and sort of chants that weren't, you know, you couldn't even figure out what sort of chants there were, but they were there. It was obviously recorded in some stadium in the past. And I was just thinking, I don't know about you, but I felt a bit cheated, because sport is sport and TV cameras just cover what's there. Television doesn't really interfere with sport as such. You know, it covers what's there. If there's no crowd, there's no crowd. If there is a crowd, there is a crowd. But the fact now that the BBC, and I think Sky are doing it as well, are dubbing in crowd noises at matches. I don't know how I feel about that. How do you feel about that? You don't care. You're right. You probably shouldn't care. 51551, ray@rte.ie. Now, a big week for us this week. Loads of things happening. Will I start at the end and work back? Comic Relief is happening on Friday. You've probably read about it over the weekend. It starts at 8 o'clock on the telly, and then it goes through till 11:30 or sometime. We'll be talking to Baz Ashmawe about that after 4 o'clock. He's one of the presenters. And of course, The Den is coming back together, and Zig and Zag and I and Dustin will be there. And there's whispers of big guests who want to appear on The Den reunion. So I can't really tell you. Anyway, big names will appear on The Den thing. So that's on Friday. Then on Thursday, we're announcing the winners of A Page for My Life. Had a Zoom call with our four judges and Penny this morning. Owen Colfer, Donald Ryan, Emily Pine and Eamonn McLysett. Eamonn McLysett has a black cat, just so you know. Owen Colfer won the best background for the Zoom call. I'm feeling very self-conscious about it now. I have a grey wall behind me in Zoom calls, and it doesn't compare well to the other people's backgrounds. I know you shouldn't be comparing yourself. I know all that, but I think I'll have to do something about that. Anyway, that's on Thursday, so we'll be announcing the winners of that and reading out the winners. Then on Wednesday, we're doing Ireland Says Thank You via Zoom. So thanks to everybody who got in touch over the weekend. Ireland Says Thank You at rte.ie. So we have 14 of the 32 counties. The idea is that we want all 32 counties represented. And everybody will have a little story, or maybe not a story. Maybe they'll just say, I'm from Kilkenny and I want to say thanks to the frontline workers. I'm from Longford and I want to say thanks to the bin people. You know, anyway, we're looking for 32. We have 14, which means we're 18 short. So the counties that haven't stepped up to the plate, Armagh, Carlow, Cavan, Clare, Derry, Down, Fermanagh, Galway, Kerry, Kildare, Leitrim, Louth, Monaghan, Sligo, Tipperary, Tyrone and Westmeath. I'm here.
The number is on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can ring us as well. Ireland Says Thank You. Or you can ring us at 1850-715-900. So Armagh, Carlow, Cavan, Clare, Derry, Down, Fermanagh, Galway, Kerry, Kildare, Leitrim, Louth, Monaghan, Sligo, Tipperary, Tyrone, Westmeath and Wicklow. We're looking for you. And the idea is that on Wednesday we will have a representative from all 32 counties on a Zoom call, and throughout the programme we'll go to everybody as they sit in their kitchen and we'll ask them to represent their county and say thanks. It's Ireland Says Thank You, because definitely you can feel it that this day next week is a big day, isn't it? In when they write the history of this pandemic and this lockdown, that June 29th will be the date that loads of things open and loads of things change and people can travel here, there and everywhere. So before we forget about the people who got us through it all, we want to say thanks. And that's happening on Wednesday. So that's Tuesday is tomorrow, and then today is today. So that's it's a busy week. It's a busy week. And just to give you an idea of some of the emails we're getting in to Ireland Says Thank You at rte.ie, this came in from Claire. And she says, I'm writing this while trying to get our 8-week-old baby to sleep. My thank you is for a group of people, namely the staff of Unit 3, antenatal, in the National Maternity Hospital, where I spent 10 weeks before our baby Sarah was born on the 22nd of April 2020, in the middle of lockdown. A numerologist would love that, wouldn't they? The 22nd of April 2020. Anyway, my story begins on the 15th of February this year, when myself and my husband rushed to our nearest hospital in Letterkenny, County Donegal, at 5 o'clock in the morning with yet another bleed during the pregnancy. What we didn't know was that my waters had also started leaking. Fast forward a few hours later and I'm en route to Holles Street by ambulance. On arrival, I was told there's a high probability of the baby arriving in the following 48 hours. This didn't happen, and baby Sarah stuck it out to 33 weeks gestation when she arrived by emergency section on April 22nd. So my thank you is obviously to the staff who looked after me during that time. Unit 3 in the National Maternity Hospital is a very special place. I spent exactly 10 weeks in the hospital, and there wasn't one day where I could say that staff didn't give me 100%. I didn't get to see our two other children, Charlie 11, Connor 9, for 8 weeks, and didn't get to see my husband for 6 weeks. My husband didn't make it to the delivery of our little girl, Sarah, either. So obviously, with no visitors allowed into the hospital, the staff became a very important part of my life. There were other long-term patients in the ward with me too, who arrived on the same day and we became great friends. And a few weeks into our stay, we were joined by two more amazing women for a few weeks. The staff went above and beyond caring for us. Myself and my husband Jason will never be able to thank the staff for the support I received over this time, which went beyond the duty of care. They were there every minute of every day for my emotional and physical well-being. They listened to me during my bad days and laughed at me through the good days. They knew it was hard for us long-term patients not having visitors. They would ask after our families every day and tell us stories from their home lives. They became our family. On Sundays, they would try to come up with something to pass an hour or two, as it always seemed that Sunday was the longest day. So we have fond memories of serious laughs during family fortunes, bingo, and a lovely afternoon of tea and treats, which the staff brought us from the vending machines with their own money. I could list several little stories about different acts of kindness from the staff, the doctors, midwives, healthcare assistants, catering staff, cleaners, student midwives. All are pretty amazing people. So from a small village in West Donegal, I would like to say a massive thank you to them, says Claire. So that's it. So Claire, representing Donegal there, tells her story on the Zoom call and says thank you from the people of Donegal. And that's the type of thing. So Ireland says thank you at rte.ie. Or if you're by the phone now and you say, oh, I'd like to do that on Wednesday afternoon. Yeah, I want to say thank you to somebody. 1850 715 900. 1850 715 900. And the two Neves are up there and they're like a sort of an intrepid detective duo. Neve Hamill and Neve Hassel. Hamill and Hassel. They could have their own TV show. So they're personing the phones and they're ringing everybody who gets in touch and they're ringing people that we've met from various counties and they're putting it all together. So thanks in advance to Hamill and Hassel, Neve and Neve. We're up there on the phone at the moment. Now, let's see what you're saying. On the soccer, I agree that the sound effects are a little weird. However, as a former soccer coach, I would suggest that coaches should listen in to the team manager's talk and shouts they will learn from the pros. Aha, John Whelan, Tala. So now that there isn't crowd noise, you can hear the managers more clearly. And John suggests that if you're an amateur manager at local level, that you might learn something from the pros. There's a person doing the crowd noise for each match. The crowd noise is great. You can choose on Sky to watch with or without it. It's terrible watching a game without it, says Paul in Arklow, who's a Liverpool fan. YNWA, you never walk alone. Yes, the real crowd sounds. You do have an option on Sky Sports to turn those off. Didn't know that. The dub noise in matches, I'd say, is drown out the bad language from the players on the pitch, suggests somebody. And good on you for raising the cycling helmet issue. Please keep on to everyone about this. With more and more of us cycling, we need to get helmet smart. That's Mary, who's happy and listening in Galway. Good to hear you're happy, Mary. I read over the weekend that the crowd noises were provided by EA Sports, the video game makers. There's an interview in that. That says Brian. Please wish Jessica and Ewan Woodlock a happy birthday in RD County Louth. Happy to do so. Happy birthday, Jessica and Ewan. And you mentioned that you might need to do something about his Zoom background. How about this? Chester Beatty is offering images from across its collections as backdrops for virtual meetings. Dragon robes, paintings from Iran, delicate calligraphy, snuff bottles or Parisian costumes can make those Zoom meetings way more artistic. Chester Beatty is featured on the Google Arts and Culture platform and the website has a range of activities including tours and learning resources. That's Margaret Coyne. Now, did we get an email from you before, Margaret? Was it some, I think it was a gallery in Limerick who are offering the same service that you can download some of their paintings and use them as backgrounds, virtual backgrounds for your Zoom meetings. 515 Ray at RT.ie. Entertainment.ie, if you're a fan of David Gray and particularly a fan of his White Ladder album, they've a fun little quiz there. They've 10 questions on lyrics from White Ladder. See how you do. I got 6 out of 10. Bit disappointing, but 6 out of 10 ain't bad. It's better than 5 and 4. 3, 2, and 1. Good afternoon. David Gray from his latest album, that's The Sapling on RT Radio 1. 515 on RT.ie. Love the idea of the Den coming back this Friday. No mention of Socky, Snotzer and Zuppy. Is there hope of them coming on? Fingers crossed, says Brian and Claire. Anything could happen. It's going to be live. Anything could happen, Brian. And Martin has been on. I think they should mix the sounds up for the crack. Put GAA commentary sound in Premier League matches, hurling commentary in the upcoming Chess World Championship and so on. Be great for viewing, says Martin. Well, Tom Maguire who's the head of radio here and soon to retire, was telling me a story the other day that there was a man called John Joyce, well, he's still alive, who worked in the Athlone studios, and he was a sound man back in the day. And he was doing this long before the lockdown, and he used crowd sounds from, you know, a big championship game, a GAA championship game, and he used it for a League of Ireland match. There was only something like 200 people at it, and it was on the radio. So John Joyce brought along his bag of tricks, the sound apps from a GAA county game, and played it over the League of Ireland, and it worked a treat. And that was back in the 70s, I think, Tom said. So there. Could you please wish my little cat Oreo... I started so I'll finish. Could you? Don't, no, I'm not doing pet requests. I've started this, so I'm just going to finish it, Ger. Okay? But do not, please do not send in requests for pets' birthdays. Thank you. Okay, could you please wish my little cat Oreo a happy birthday? She's very special to me and we listen to your show every single day together. We both love your programme. She'll be 6 tomorrow. All the best, Ger. Meow. Sorry.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
515 on Ray at RTE.ie. Antrim take on Limerick in the All-Ireland quiz today. We're into round two and that's happening after 4 o'clock. Now, as you heard the lady say, restrictions have been lifted, as in from next week. And on Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar announced that on Friday. And one of the things that's been lifted is a reopening of places of worship with limited numbers. So 50 people can attend Mass, as in from next Monday. We spoke to Father Charlie MacDonald from Westport Parish in County Mayo back in March at the start of COVID-19 pandemic. He's back on the line now. How are you doing, Charlie?
Good, Ray, thanks. Yeah.
Good to talk. How have you been?
Stress-free and busy. It's amazing. COVID seemed to suck one thing out of the air, and that seems to be a lot of stress, Ray,
yes,
for some reason. Yeah. Everything moved online. People were much more, you know, sound. There was less hassle.
Yes.
The blood pressure was down. I think all these things are kind of starting to pump up again, you know?
I'm laughing, right? It's a laugh of recognition. Because I said upstairs, I can feel a sizzle of stress for the first time in a long time. So you're the same.
Yeah.
You're the same. Isn't that mad?
A lot of that out there, yeah.
So what can we learn then? What can we learn from just stay online, is it? Or I don't know.
Where do we go? I suppose, Zoom meetings were great. You happened to travel to and from them.
Yes.
That was certainly one thing.
We'll keep that. Is that what you're saying? We'll keep that.
Well, I think, I think chairs and Zoom could be good and Microsoft could be good to buy over the next couple of years.
Yes.
But I'd say that was one thing. I think we were much more tolerant of each other. There was a thing, we're not all in the same boat, we're in the same storm.
Yes.
And the fact that everybody was in the same storm, there was a bit of that kind of going on. And there was a lot of kind of, we found here in the parish, we went online around that time in March when I spoke to you last. We, you know, physically, we did the funerals, we visited the dying, we did everything we could do physically. But people were very happy with the service they were getting. They were acknowledging there was something going on. And there was a greater level of just tolerance and appreciation, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that was right across society. Whereas now I'm going, okay, that thing that we were going at before, that fight we were having, that's going to all bubble up again and here we go again.
Of course it is, yes. And you're going to have problems now because 50 people, as in from next week, how do you decide which 50 people are going to get into Mass?
We don't, in the sense that we're waiting to see, get clarification around this thing of 50, because it's 50 across, right across the board. It's not just churches, I understand it. It's 50
indoors,
anything.
Yeah, yes.
So I suppose the one thing, I suppose the bishops put a couple of massive documents together. One was here in the west of Ireland, everything was done. So we're waiting. I know it's come back to Nemeth now, and the clarification coming from them around the 50. If it's 50 in Westport, one of the things, we have another meeting of our group tonight that we would say is, okay, we'll issue 50 tickets for each Mass and we'll give those to the people who have anniversary Masses booked. So if Mass is for your dad or your brother or your sister or whoever, then we divide it by the number of Masses we have and give out the tickets. That's one thing we might do.
Okay.
Like, the gas thing is, I suppose, we did a survey here last Friday and a neighbouring parish did a more comprehensive one last week. The majority of people, Mass attenders, aren't ready to return. They don't want to return to Mass. They're very happy with staying at home. They're very happy with online. They're very happy with local radio, RTE radio, Midwest radio, whatever it is. And some of them are saying we won't return until the autumn until we see how this plays out,
yes,
that it is safe and that it is okay.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm just looking at the figures here. So your church has a capacity of 1,200.
Yeah.
Your average attendance on a Sunday will be 700.
Yeah.
And you went online and provided a full service, about 2,000 people watching the Sunday Mass.
Well, on Facebook, that's what you were getting. By the time the evening went up, about 2,500 views. So you could say a good 1,500 to 2,000 people would have watched it. On a daily basis, while Mass is going on, we'd have about 200 people watching online.
Okay.
On a Sunday, when it's going on, it'd be about 700 or 800. But over the day, you'd see about 2,500 views, however that works out, yeah.
I read somewhere, and it's a thing that's been talked about a lot over the last few years, and it is the ageing demographic of priests.
Sure.
Yeah, and they're in a sort of a, you know, if you're over 70, whether you're a priest or not, you're going to be cocooning, you're going to be a lot more careful about where you go, and you're definitely not going to put yourself in harm's way by going into a packed church. So what effect is that going to have, do you think?
I suppose the first thing that happened with priests, I think, was at the start of the pandemic, that more priests initially died than doctors or nurses.
Right.
And I think that created a particular panic among the Irish bishops, I think, at the time, you know, to protect
I didn't hear that statistic, no.
No, you can check it out. That's certainly at the start.
No, I'm not questioning it.
Yeah, but it's an interesting one. And it's easy to see how it happened. Like, at the very start of the pandemic, people were sick and they were dying. Priests went out, many of them older men, went in anointing, doing what they would normally do. There was touch involved. Some priests may have sat with people for a couple hours or whatever as they were dying.
Mm.
And then they themselves became prone to the pandemic.
Yes.
So yeah, that was a statistic. So I think that panicked. Bishops maybe a bit, or certainly if it didn't panic them, it certainly made them aware.
Yeah.
So priests here very early on was, you know, you're part of the cocooning, you're part of all that. And for the most part, the lads over 70 did cocoon. But a lot of guys also are very conscious, we say. Some of them were able to, one guy who said, no, my house isn't in the church grounds, the church is in the house grounds. So what he used to do then was, if it was a funeral, the people would come to the parish church, which was in the grounds of the house, so he wasn't breaking any rules.
Uh-huh.
Nobody went near him. He came into the sacristy, he went out on the altar, he was well more than 2 metres from anybody. He went out, this would be a guy, but he would be well over, he'd be over 70. Once they're well over 70, I get shot. And then he went to the graveyard and he stayed at a distance. He did the prayers from the car.
Yeah.
So guys were doing all kinds of things to kind of get around it. And then there were some guys who were cocooning.
I suppose the thing that's got most attention is the funeral and the way funerals have been handled. And we saw there with the very sad funeral in Charlestown there of Detective Garda Colm Horgan over the weekend, that there's this thing that people are lining the street now, and that's become common, has it?
Yeah, you know, I remember the last time I was on with you, you were asking how would we do funerals?
Yeah.
And the Irish people, you know, as you said, we do funerals well. Now, I think we do funerals well because we do community well. And the Irish people just reacted and did what they could do. So whatever it was, we'd say, as I was saying to Fiona this morning, your researcher, the whole thing of going out. I remember going out the road to a funeral. The burial was about 8 miles out the road, and the hair stood. I've none on the top of my head, no more than this yourself, but the hair stood on the back of my neck, right, to see the way in which neighbours had lined the roof outside their own houses to acknowledge the funeral as it went by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all other kinds, the whole online condolences thing took off. People weren't silent during the pandemic when it came to offering sympathy and offering support. The first couple of weeks were awful. The 10 thing was terrible initially for families and who's the 10 going to be and all that. But very quickly then, very kind of ingenious ways of not
working around it. Yeah.
Yeah, it worked out and it did. Yeah. But it was the worst part. Funerals, definitely.
We watched the funeral this morning in our house, and it's heartbreaking. That's the first occasion we had to do it, somebody close to us, but it's to be at a distance. That must be so heartbreaking for people, and I know you're virtually there, but you're not, and then the whole thing about not being able to hug people and not being able to shake hands, all those things that you do to help people when they're grieving, they've been taken away from us, and that's all very sad. But
the lack of touch was massive. You know,
yes,
there were a couple of occasions myself where, you know, I'll be honest about it, there was two occasions where I couldn't avoid it. You know, there was one where I was called to the scene of an incident where somebody had died tragically, And, you know, someone went to hug me. What do you do? Just turn them away. Yeah. You know, so the whole thing of touch was very, very difficult. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, particularly around grief.
Around grief, it is. It's difficult. Yeah. So 50 next week, and then July 20th, it's up to 100. Like over the next few months, it's going to take a long time to get back to any sort of normality. It's going to be a long time before you'll see 700 parishioners in front of you on a Sunday for Mass.
If we ever do again, yeah, to be honest, because people have got, first of all, people are aware of their health. You know, there are a lot of people who are quite nervous and unsure. There are people who've got very, very comfortable sitting at home, watching it online. Mm. You know, and then the whole capacity of the church, because like we're very lucky, as you said, our capacity normally would be 1,200, and like with proper social distancing, we can now get between 90 and 250, right, depending on, we'll say, families together and stuff. So the average, probably about 150, is what we can take in the church. I suppose one of our big issues here in Westport is, first and foremost, we always care for our own parishioners, but we see this online as well. An awful lot of it.
You're gone. I Charlie was probably going to say that there's
a lot of the congregation on a Sunday, you know.
I missed you broke up there, but I'd imagine what you said was there. You're going to have a lot of people on holidays in Westport over the summer.
Yeah, that's part of it as well, and we need to facilitate them as best we can. Yeah.
Yeah. So just before I let you go, a sort of a bigger philosophical question: do you think people have reassessed their relationship with God, with organized religion, over the last 3 months?
I don't honestly know, Ray, and I think that's going to pan out. I think there's no question about it. At the start of the pandemic, I was contacted by, and I'm 48, a number of people kind of 10 years below, from 10 years below me to my own age and a few years above me, who were in that place. But I think as time goes on, only time will tell. I think there are people certainly who, at the height of the fear of the pandemic, would certainly have found themselves questioning and turning back. But
turning back to religion, turning back to God.
Well, I think back to God, I think the whole thing of turning back to organized religion can be quite complicated for people, and you know that yourself. It can be quite, you know, it's a big question. I think an awful lot of what I would find about, we'll say, here in the parish, here in this community, an awful lot of it is about personal relationship. And so I think there would have been a certain amount of turning back towards organized religion. But I think the people wouldn't have shook a lot of the issues they would have either. They would still have the same questions, they would still have the reservations. But I think some would. It's difficult to kind of pin it down and say, oh yeah, absolutely. Ring me up in 6 months' time.
I will. I hope we'll talk to you before that, Charlie.
But if you're on Westport, give us a shout.
Yeah. For the moment, Charlie, thanks very much. What a lovely priest you have on. He seems like a very modern and down-to-earth guy who is a blessing to whatever parish he's in. Westport, we need more like him, says somebody. And John Coughlin says, great to hear from Father Charlie again, a great Castlebar man bringing a bit of belief to the people of Westport. And on Zoom, I bought two rolls of wallpaper with ancient books on them for 20 euro on Amazon. The wallpaper is in my Zoom background. I tell people the books have been in my family for 800 years, go, man, Pete and Limerick. There you go. And if you did that virtually, people would spot that it wasn't real. But hats off to you. Just let us know where you got that. I might be in line for some of that wallpaper myself, Pete. 51551. Thanks, Pete. Right, quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
RayRT.ie. Now, believe it or not, it's 4 weeks since George Floyd was killed by Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis. And since then, there's been loads of protests all over the world. And there's been loads of discussion in newspapers, on radio and television about racism. We decided we'd have a more considered chat because there was a lot of knee-jerk reaction at the time. So we invited Dr. Eben Joseph back on the show. She spoke to us back in September. She's an author, intercultural consultant and creator of the first ever Black Studies model in UCD. Eben, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ray. Thank you so much for having me back on again.
Yeah.
I'm not sandwiched between two people.
Thanks for talking to us from the comfort of your own home this time.
Yes.
So I heard you on Liveline just around the time of George Floyd's killing. And you were very exercised by the whole thing. On reflection now, and it's 4 weeks on, and a lot has happened, and there's been a lot of discussion. How do you feel now about what's happening in the world with regard to racism?
I think that even when I heard the way you introduced it, the way you've introduced this topic today is different from the way it would have been introduced before. You said the killing of George Floyd. We would not have heard that on our radios in Ireland or even in the US, you know. So now people are openly, you know, they won't be saying claimed, you know, all of those, you know, hedging yes. around, it's all gone, you know. So even the language with which you presented this today for me has changed, you know. So I'm in I am in two spaces, one very discouraged, but also extremely encouraged because the conversation has changed. Mm. When it first started, we started from a place where we were saying, oh, you know, it's in the US, it's not here, you know, it doesn't involve us, you know. So we were also, you know, having conversations whether Ireland could be racist or whether there is racism in Ireland. And I think in the last 4 weeks, we've just gone leaps and bounds. So while I'm discouraged that, you know, this is what we are having and this is the experience, but I'm extremely encouraged because the conversation has shifted. People actually want to know. People actually are learning. The top selling books are on race and racism. So again, so in a good way, that is happening. But also my worry is, you know, that this doesn't just end here with, you know, people feeling, oh yeah, we've talked about it and all of that. Mm. That so that in 10 years time, in 20 years time, we don't want to march again. We've marched already.
Yes, we heard people's testimony on Liveline, many people from Trey right through, all with story after story of racism. And I read an article, an interview you gave, and I'd never heard this before, but in Ireland, until you're 10, you're Irish, and then after that, you're black.
Yeah, you know, and if you just go online now, and I've been very disheartened, and I think that's why, you know, I'm saying I'm discouraged, but I'm also encouraged, you know, by the responses. There's been a lot of support and a lot of people wanting to learn, but it also meant that a lot of young people, we know this, you know, but for them, these young people have actually gone online, many of them on Instagram. They've actually put the names of the schools, they've actually put the names of their teachers, they've actually put the names of their colleagues, you know, from the, you know, like just their racist experiences that they've had within the schools. And so I'm just a little bit gutted, like, oh my God, we send kids to school. Most of these schools are fee-paying schools. We've sent them to schools to go and learn. And this is what they are going through. One of the young girls said, you know, I was so ashamed to be black in that class. I mean, I was like, oh my God, you know, because, you know, a teacher told them, you know, three black girls sitting together. Why are you sitting together? What would it look like if somebody came into the class and saw you like that? Yeah. You know? And the students said that what they learned is that you have to have a white person beside you for you to be accepted. At such a tender age, when their identities are being formed, you know, so we create things, yes.
Eben, I was interested because a lot of talk about, you know, the history of slavery, and then what happened in Bristol there with the taking down the statue and all that. And, like, we're a different country, and I didn't see much chat or discussion about the origins of racism in Ireland, because we are a different country. And as I said to you when you were on the show before, up until 20 years ago, we were probably the whitest country in Europe. So although we may have been latently racist, we never encountered other races. So it never sort of became obvious. So what have you done in your studies about that? Because we don't have slavery in our history as a country.
Yeah. And again, that's where, you know, information is key. Education is key. That, you know, right now, the key thing we need to go back to is to go back and get some education, get some information. When we look at the notion of race, race was created. See, people, you cannot make race sound good. We cannot make race good. Race was created to separate groups of people. It was created to show that some people were inferior and that some people were superior. It was created to show white supremacy from the 17th century. So even when I teach, I don't teach about the, you know, the slaves. I teach about the enslavement of people. And so that's where that, even when the people who teach it, you know, makes a huge difference. And just a change in the world from slave to enslavement begins to show you a different understanding, you know, of the world and all the things that happened,
yes,
you know, around it. You know, so when we look at race, racism is built on race. The existence of race alone means that racism is every day, it is commonplace, and it continues to exist.
But races exist. There's a white race and there's a black race. Would you prefer that the word race didn't exist?
Actually, race doesn't exist.
Does it not?
You know,
it's a construct. Is it made up by somebody?
It's
back?
A construct, absolutely. You know, so when I'm teaching, you know, I'll tell the kids, I'm like, okay, look, I'm just going to say something very silly right now, because on one hand, I'm going to tell you that race doesn't exist, and in the very same breath, I'm going to tell you that race exists. And so then we deconstruct that, what it means. Race doesn't exist because, you know, biologically there is no difference.
Yes.
So it's not a scientific reality. However, races exist because the consequences, you know, of being categorized as different has both financial, economic, and social consequences on where you can and cannot go, what you can and cannot have, you know, and how people are treated. So on one hand, scientifically, races do not exist, but it is a social construct that changes across time and space.
Yes.
So the meaning of race in the United States is, while the foundation are all the same of race, to separate and to show one group as inferior and another group as superior, but when you cross boundaries and when you cross time, the meaning of race begins to change.
Okay.
At one time, race meant that people could be enslaved, you understand?
Yes.
But in the 60s, you know, in the 50s, it meant you could not go to school and all sit in the same class or,
yes,
get on the same buses. But in the 70s, the meaning of race changed. So it changes with time and it changes with space.
And where are we at now then in Ireland in 2020?
I think we're in a good space. We're in a good space, but what will happen is what we do with it. So the key thing is for us to all remember that we all inherited this racist space that we are, black or white. So I hear some white people tell me that, you know, I'm like, no, we don't need anybody to be ashamed of my blackness or your whiteness. We don't need that. What we need is that we all inherited these racist spaces that we're in. The question is, what are you, what am I, what are we going to do with this racist space that we inherited? It's an inheritance. We got it.
So what do you suggest happens? I know you're doing webinars now on a Thursday night, and the first one was an all-black webinar, and then last Thursday you invited white people on.
Actually, the first one wasn't for all black, but the team, the panelists were all black.
Oh, sorry.
So again,
yes.
So the key thing, what we were saying is that, you know, you need to listen to us. So the first thing about walking through race is that you need to listen to the people who are impacted by it, you know? And so that is the very first thing you can do. If you actually want to be an ally, you want to be a friend, you want to take action, you're asking yourself, what can I do? You want to listen. Really important, you know, that there is benefit when we talk about our experiences of race and racisms. And there is also a benefit when people who have never experienced it, you know, or who've experienced it to different degrees, there is a benefit when they listen. So the first step is that people listen. So, you know, so my panel was all black, you know, so that they can talk about the experience and what they want, what they feel can be done. You know, so they were talking to people who were saying, I want to be an ally. So we had a really good attendance. I think we had about 330 people in that webinar, you know, and so that was brilliant.
And
so that for me shows.
What was the consensus then about what needs to be done?
I think key things that we talked about, you know, was just, you know, on an individual basis, number one, that people need to listen, you know, that when people tell you about that, you know, their experiences of race and racism, it's not an invitation for you to tell them how when you were, you know, this size, or, you know, how, you know, your experience about, you know, other discriminations, you know, that people talking about their experience of racism does not take away from ours.
Yes.
You know, people should listen. But it also means that, you know, we also begin to look at, you know, there are no hate crime laws in Ireland,
yes,
you know, so those key things that we need to put in place. We also talked about the fact that, you know, organizations and individuals, you know, need to ask themselves when we, is how we respond when somebody reports, you know, a case of racism. How do we treat it? How do we respond? You know, most times we make the victims, we victimize the victims. But the question I'm asking is, organizations and individuals need to ask yourself, what is it about my school? What is it about my office or our institution that makes it comfortable for this kind of racist behaviors to occur? So really key thing, and I think one key thing which I really want people to hear me saying today is that when we talk about racism, that, you know, we should focus more on racist policies and racist ideas and racist actions, because we are not permanent racist. Okay, there are a few permanent racists, a few, all right? But the thing is that that racism, you know, we exhibit, it changes. We can be racist when it comes to direct provision and not be racist when it comes to the environment. We can be racist when it comes to Black people and not be racist when it comes to,
Yeah, but direct provision is, you've mentioned it there. Would you see that as sort of state racism?
Well, that is massive state racism. And the only reason it operates is because there are some racist policies that we have put in place. So to change direct provision, we need to question the policies that are maintaining direct provision. If we change the policies, what we have as direct provision today will change. Yeah. So it's the policies and that is maintaining it.
Well, in the new program for government, if the new government is formed this weekend, there is provision to change direct provision. I'm interested to know, just back to Ireland as a sort of an island state with no history, direct history of slavery itself. Is it a cultural import from you know, American literature, American TV? Is that where we get it from? I'm just wondering where.
Actually, we have history of slavery. We were enslaved. We moved from being enslaved in Ireland to become enslavers. If you look at the sugar plantations in the Caribbean, they were owned by Irish people.
Yes, of course, yes.
They were. And some of the monies that were sent back home to build our nation in Ireland came from those sugar plantations.
There you go. I didn't know that.
So in other words, we're saying that we built some part, not all, but some part of our nation was built on the backs of enslaved Black people who were working in those sugar plantations. A lot of people have written, a lot of Irish historians have written about it. So there is a lot of material out there that shows that. So we are benefactors. Don't forget that there is this automatic, privilege that we get from whiteness, and that's why when we talk about the Irish, when they went to the United States, when the Irish became whites, so as benefactors of whiteness, it automatically, what the enslavement of people did, that elevated, whites above Black. We as a nation, we are benefactors.
I completely understand that. And education, and you say over and over again, is so important. And do you feel that the Irish educational system is geared towards teaching their pupils about race and about anti-racism?
I think that's my biggest fear. My biggest fear is that when we get into September, students are going to come to school very hungry. They will be asking questions about race and racism and structural racism. So my fear is that people who are unqualified, people who have no background, no knowledge, are going to be teaching flawed knowledge. So I am worried. So key things I'm saying is that, the department has set up this anti-racism strategy, that has no clear, we have no direction on how those people were selected to be on it. The chairperson is someone who does not have a lived experience of racism. So we want to begin to look at how from primary school, because we're teaching consent in schools. So the key things, I have a book coming out soon, and part of what I talk about in that book is how we teach, how we manage difference. So I talk about acceptance, how we teach people to be accepting of difference. That's where we want to begin to start from. And it must start from primary schools.
It also starts at home.
Somebody is a manager. Absolutely.
It starts at home as well. And
absolutely.
Know,
you know. And just to say that I really think, and if I will indict anybody here today, it will be our education system. Before I blame any individual, any young person, any manager, I will blame our education system.
Well, because in defense of the education system, and you know, as I said, we were a predominantly white country up until about 20 years ago. So it wasn't a consideration.
But let me give you this scenario. Okay. Think about it. What are we doing right now? We want scientists. What are we doing? We're training scientists. We're training doctors. We're training lawyers. So what we cannot expect to have a nation of scientists if we don't train them. So we'll say we want anti-racist in Ireland. Yes. If we do not train you, our managers to be anti-racist, they cannot be. So we're expecting parents to teach them from what? We've all learned from a dysfunction. We all inherited these racist spaces, you know? So if we don't unlearn it, we have to be taught so we can unlearn what we know. And then we do what we call active learning, you know? So we relearn, but from a good place. But our education system has to do that. Think about it. It is only educators. Yeah.
Before I let you go, Evan, have you engaged with people who troll you?
Oh, my God. I block people like every day. Like when I get from here now, at least I will have to block like 50 more people.
But
I have threats.
Is there anybody who will engage you in some sort of civil conversation or discussion? You know, people who come on and troll you on social media, if you, that expression that everyone's using now, if you reached out to them, would they engage you in?
No, they don't. They don't want to. So my trolls, I've personalized them. I'm having a relationship with my trolls. Oh my God, I'm sounding crazy now.
Yeah, Stockholm syndrome or some variation
Stockholm
of it.
Syndrome,
yeah,
I'm telling you. So the trolls who troll me, they are very special. They only come to challenge a few things. They don't want to hear what I'm saying.
Yes.
They actually don't. They are blocked. They don't want to hear, you know, because sometimes I actually try and engage. And then I'm engaging for money. I'm like, Evan, you're doing this thing. You're wasting your time. They don't want to listen. They just want to tell you what they want to say. Okay. So they want to tell me that, you know, Ireland gave me a good education. I'm like, really? If they're giving it to me, then they should share it out to everybody.
Yes.
So that's one thing they want to come and tell me. They want to come and tell me that I should be grateful for this education. But I'm like, you know, I did pay for it, right? Yes, I was working full time and studying at the same time.
Flawed arguments.
That's all. So they don't want to hear. Okay. They don't want to have a conversation.
Evan,
they just want to come and tell me what I should be grateful
when
for.
When this is over and you can come back into studio without putting yourself in harm's way, I'm inviting you now to come back in and we should have a round the table discussion about this maybe sometime in September. But for the moment...
Really, that would be nice.
Yes,
that would be really lovely.
Dr. Evan Joseph, thanks so much for taking our call and mind yourself
and stay
safe.
Thank you so much.
I know.
Thank you and you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And Augusta has been on from Limerick. It's always forgotten every time we talk about racism in Ireland that we have been racist against travellers, Vietnamese, even against Jews at one stage in our history. That's Augusta in Limerick. Thanks for that, Augusta. And Ishtoshin Aoun, the Freeb Skelton, and Oaktila, Marion Ihulawan. Good Marion, thanks so much. 51551 ray at rte.ie. It's that time of the day. Yes! We're into the second round of the All-Ireland Quiz, and today Antrim take on Limerick. And flying the flag for Antrim is Dan Carlin. How are you doing, Dan?
Best, Ray. Very well, thanks.
Good to talk to you again.
Thanks.
So a reminder to people that you work in the catering trade.
Yeah, pretty much. Supplying butcher shops with beef is my main thing these days.
Right. And restrictions, are they opening up next week, restaurants and hotels in up the north, or what way is it?
Yeah, from what I hear, they're starting to open up. The carryouts have opened and relaxed a lot in the last few weeks, and there's a few more things starting to open up next weekend.
Right. And you've Jane, who's 11, John and Dan, who are 12 and 13. So
that's right.
A crowded house. Are they all on
a crowded house, especially.
Go on.
Jane's cousin Rosa comes over to us all the time, a great girl, Rosa.
Right, so you've four children in the house.
One borrowed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Are they finished school, Dan?
Officially, I think they go to the end of this week, but they've been homeschooling for a while. So the homework's still piling in.
Right. Did anybody hear you on the quiz?
A few people keep me going about it.
Yeah. Okay, so you're up against Limerick today, and representing Limerick is Dermot Byrne. How are you doing, Dermot?
How's it going, Ray? How are you?
Good to talk to you again. So you're a secondary school teacher, so you're officially on your summer holidays now.
We are, yeah.
Yeah, well, good bit now.
Summary today, but we're on the holidays anyway, yeah.
Yeah. How are you filling your days, do you mind me asking?
To be honest, yeah, I was kind of doing schoolwork up till about a week and a half ago, and then over the last little while, playing a bit of golf and stuff like that, really, mainly, anyway. So, just keeping myself tipping away, you know.
Had you any dealings with Leaving Cert?
I had a bit of dealings with Leaving Cert, alright, yeah, did most teachers like, but, a tough time would look probably a better solution than the August exams, I'd say, alright. Like, you know?
And today is the day, is it, that everything has to be into the department?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not too sure. I'd say, I know just we'd had to submit our stuff to the school or whatever, and if the schools then probably have to send them in by today or whatever, yeah. But I'd say schools are probably working away on it over the last week or 2 weeks, like, depending on how quickly or slowly things are coming in, like, you know.
Yeah. It'll be a year that's always remembered, isn't it? It's 2020.
It is, it's hard for 6 years. They've missed out on a lot, like, a lot of milestones, I suppose, between graduations and dibs and all those different things that go on in 6 years. Like, they've missed out on a lot of those things. But sure, look, at least there's a solution at the end of it anyway. Like, you know, it would be very hard, as Dan was saying there, it would be very hard if we were still teaching Leaving Cert until August to try and keep the momentum up to then, like, you know.
Yes,
it'd be very difficult.
I was in a group of people yesterday and they were talking about the Leaving Cert, and it was odd because some people were laying stories about their children saying they were delighted that they didn't have to do it, and then others were saying that their children or their child was very disappointed that they didn't get a chance to actually sit the exam. And that's, I'd say that's echoed around the country, is it?
It's hard to know, like, you know. I suppose everyone is different and everyone has their own situation, really, like, you know. I suppose the hardest thing is for those that want to do the exam, like, they're kind of, they have to give up that year of college next year, like, wait the year, like,
yes,
you know, which is very, very hard. But, like, you've no doubt those that, you know, really worked hard would love the opportunity to show off what they know, like, for everyone, like, to show off their talents.
Yes,
like, you know?
They do.
Exactly.
You on the All-Ireland quiz today, you're going to show off your knowledge. Right, Dan representing Antrim, this is your motivational song that you picked. Great choice, BB King and you too. Why that one in particular, Dan?
I was going somewhere with my oldest boy, Daniel, on Saturday morning, and we put on the U2 CD in the car and he enjoyed U2. He thought it was good.
Yeah, there you go. So he had a hand in choosing it. And for you, Dermot Byrne. You don't have to be made of stone not to be motivated by that. Dropkick Murphy's there, and that's Dermot's choice. Okay, good luck to you both. Dan representing Antrim and Dermot representing Limerick. Let's get a bit of tension going. Okay, so we need your answers as quickly as possible, gentlemen, and no referring to Google. Dan, your first question. In what year did Ireland declare itself a republic? 1949 or 1950?
I'll go for 49.
Is the correct answer. And for you, Dermot, in what year did the Dublin lockout take place? 1912 or 1913?
1913, right.
Is correct, said with confidence. Okay, Dan, your second question is on the movies. Can you name this movie?
Came from the estate of a wealthy nobleman.
I've heard that you are of noble birth yourself.
The son and grandson of slaves.
I knew that when I saw you couldn't read. Of course, it pleases Roman vanity to think that you're noble. I shrink from the idea of fighting mere slaves, especially a man like Crassus.
Well.
Oh, it's a historical thing.
It is.
Roman, Spartacus, I'm going to guess.
Is the correct answer, from 1960.
Oh,
well
right.
Done, that was Kirk Douglas and some other gentleman there. And for you, Dermot, which movie is this?
Criminals in the Salad of Patriots.
Patriots!
Yes, like
Patriots!
Judah, let me explain something to you. Something you may not know.
The Emperor is watching us.
This is my great opportunity, Judah, and yours too. If I can bring order into Judea, I can have any post I want, and you'll rise with me, I promise.
Well?
Oh, Ray, I haven't a clue. I'll just go for something random. Julius Caesar or something, I don't know.
Ben-Hur. Ben-Hur from 1959. Before your time.
A bit before, yeah.
Still early days. Okay, Dan, your third question. Can you name the person who discovered penicillin?
Oh, penicillin. Alexander Fleming.
Is the correct answer. Discovered in London in September 1928. He was a Scottish bacteriologist. Well done. And for you, Dermot, what is the largest organ inside the human body?
Your skin.
Inside. That's the question. So I'll give you a second stab at it. What is the largest organ inside the human body?
Your...
It wasn't a trick.
Your... Oh, God, is it my intestine? What is it?
And liver. Liver is the answer I was looking for, yeah. Okay. Right, now we still have that three-pointer, so don't fret. Stay in the game, Dermot. Question number four for you, Dan. It's an audio question. Can you name this band, please? Who's that?
I know the tune. I'm not sure. It might be the Kaiser Chiefs.
It's not. It's the Kings of Leon. Sex on Fire, 2009. And for you, Dermot, a chance to get back in the game. Can you name this band? Are we human? Or are we dancer? My sign is vital. Well.
The Killers, right?
It is the Killers. Right. You're back in the game. So, Dan, you're on three. Dermot is on two. If you go for a one-pointer, you'll be on four, which means that Dermot has to go for the three-pointer. So you're putting him under pressure. But if he gets it right, he'll beat you. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, if you go for a three-pointer, you're on six, which means that Dermot can't catch you. So there's your choice.
Yeah.
A one-pointer or a three-pointer?
I'll gamble on the one again. It worked for me last time.
Okay, right. Which Dermot, it keeps you in the game. He's going for a one-pointer, even if he gets it right. Okay, here it is. J is the only letter that doesn't appear in the periodic table. True or false?
False.
It's true. It's true.
Ooh.
Okay, so you're on three. Now, Dermot,
right.
You have a couple of options here, because if you go for the one-pointer and get it right, then you force a tie-break situation. That's playing it safe. Obviously, if you go for the three-pointer and get it right, you're into the second round with your County Limerick. So what's it going to be?
I go for a one-pointer. I'll try and level it up because three-pointers will be hard.
Right, okay, here for 1 point to bring us to a tie-break situation. Uranus is the only planet in the solar system that is named after a Greek god. True or false?
False.
It's true. It's named after Uranus, Greek god of the sky. So there you go. Okay, right. Dermot, hard luck. Thanks so much for being on both times.
No bother, really. Yeah, best luck then. And, good as well.
Yeah, enjoy your summer holidays.
Dermot, hard luck, Dermot.
No
hard luck,
Dermot.
Okay, thanks, Dermot. Dan, you're through to the quarterfinals of the All-Ireland Quiz and you bring your county bathroom with you. Okay, we'll talk to you soon. Go on.
Good luck, thank you.
No,
bye.
What were you going to say, Dan? Sorry.
I'm going to say, I think I was what we call up here jammy. It was a bit jammy today.
They all count. Sure. It's not about the show, it's about the result. Isn't that what your man said, Trapattoni?
Bit of fun.
Okay, all it right, is a bit of fun. Talk to you soon, Dan. See you. Bye.
Thanks
bye.
For
the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
It's Cavan v Kilkenny tomorrow in the All-Ireland Quiz. And when we're talking things All-Ireland, on Wednesday, we're doing an All-Ireland Zoom call. Ireland says thank you. So we're looking for representatives or ambassadors from every county in the country to say thank you to the people who got us through the lockdown and the pandemic. And I know there are people who want to express their gratitude and want to express it publicly. So we're giving you an opportunity to do that on Wednesday. So if you have a story, fair enough. If you don't have a story, if you just want to say thanks, that's fair enough too. The email address is irelandsaysthankyou@rte.ie. And you can phone us now. The two Neves are upstairs, Neve Hassel and Neve Hamill. 1850 715 900. Actually, as a matter of interest, when I'm talking about Zoom, the CIO, the Chief Information Officer for Zoom, is an Irishman called Harry Mosley. And we're talking to him tomorrow because it's gone from a situation where, 4 months ago, very few people knew that Zoom existed. And now we're all talking Zoom meetings, Zoom drinks, Zoom quizzes, Zoom this, Zoom that. Anyway, we're looking for people from all over the country to come on. Ireland Says Thank You Wednesday. And the counties that we haven't got somebody for already, Armagh, Carlow, Cavan, Clare, Derry, Down, Fermanagh, Galway, Kerry, Kildare, Leitrim, Louth, Monaghan, Sligo, Tipperary, Tyrone, Westmeath, Wicklow. Come on, ye counties, 1850-715-900. Now, this Friday, an exciting night. RTÉ does Comic Relief from 8 o'clock. And over the weekend, it was announced that Baz Ashmawe is joining the presenting crew. And Baz is on the line. How are you doing, Baz?
How are you doing, Ray? How are things?
Good to talk to you. I'm good. All the better for talking to you.
There you go. I'll take that. I'll take that.
I was trying to think about that man, you know, the wingman thing. You brought
Jimmy.
Him up. Jimmy. He was brilliant. Do you keep in touch with him or...?
Sadly, I do. Sadly, I do. He's no. Jimmy and me are good mates. So I was chatting to Jimmy a fair bit through the old pandemic there, and no, he's in good form. He's a great guy, you know.
Yeah. So Friday night, what can people expect?
Now listen, I'm late to the party. Right. I only got a shout the other day about this, right? So I'm colouring in by numbers here, but they basically have so much content and people involved. Like, it's massive. You're talking, like, you know, you've Dara Breen, Hozier, Amy Huberman, you've got Chris O'Dowd, Jason Byrne, normal people, obviously, that's been Niall Horan, Pat Short, Foil Arms and Hog, you, Zig and Zag, Roy Keane. It's just endless. Derry Girls, Waterford Whispers, Pat DeFrieda. It just goes on and on and on, you know. And it's such a huge night that I think they needed another talking monkey, and that's where they gave me a call, and I've been locked down so badly I was delighted just to get out of the house, so I was like, yeah, I'd love to take part. But it sounds brilliant. Like, Deirdre's been doing this for ages, Deirdre O'Kane, and she puts on her black book is amazing. The people she's got involved in this is just mind-boggling,
And when you see the list, Baz, you realise, and this is a phrase that's often used about this country, but it's true, we punch above our weight when it comes to making people laugh.
Ah, listen, like, the personal favourites of mine are like Foil Arms and Hog. You know, those lads just crack me up. They're just brilliant. But everyone, the two Johnnies, you've got all those guys.
Yes.
They're just brilliant. Yeah, it's a wealth of talent, you know, and everyone's doing it for the right reason. I think everyone's coming out, like, we're coming, I'm careful what I say here, we're kind of coming to a new phase now, and everyone's feeling slightly upbeat. And sure, what way to bid goodbye to being locked in and a night in front of the telly for 3 hours and raise a few smiles and raise a bit of cash, you know, it's so important.
The tagline? Raise more than just a smile, and that's the purpose of the whole thing, is to raise money, because we know that charities have been left behind in all of this because all their events that were organised had to be cancelled.
It's impossible for charities.
Yeah.
It's been very hard. And, you know, everyone's having, you know, a lot of people out there are having a tough time as well, you know. So charities are looking to help the people they're involved with as well. And the Community Foundation for Ireland, you know, it distributes the funds raised within all these charities. And it's fantastic. It's such a good cause. Such a good cause, you know.
So you were on Clare Byrne the other night. The hair is going a bit...
Stop! It's the talk of the town. I think that's the only reason they brought me in. It's just so people, I can break Twitter. That's what they want. Me coming out with my big stupid head. And
has anybody suggested that? Has anybody suggested to you that you might, you know, do you know what I'm going to say next?
It's all here. If it's cut, it's the main debate in our house. Listen. The 29th, it'll all be gone. Trust me, I'm booked in and ready.
Would you let me, for example? Because I've done Tom's hair at home. I've done Jenny's hair. So I'll do it for you. I'll do a job for you.
Well, I was going to call you, to be honest about it, you know.
Here's the thing. This is the way it works in our house. I give Tom money so I can cut his hair.
It's got a bit wild at the moment. I'm sadly an old man with a man bun, which isn't a great look for anyone. So we'll get through the next week or two, and then.
But I'd say people who pay money to see you get your head shaved Baz?
Well,
I'm not going to stop now. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be under popular demand. I'm glad you're suggesting that on national radio, by the way, Ray. Maybe this is what they're trying to team me up for. But sure, look, if it raises money, yeah, you never know.
So how many children? Six, isn't it? Six children.
Six, last count, six. Now last, a couple yes. of them have flown the coop. So it's been a weird kind of time because I had the three girls at home, and then the older two, they're out. So they were isolating in their own ways. And then we've an 18-year-old as well, and he was down with his dad. And so the whole family hasn't got together for quite a while. And just recently, they all came back into the house for, it was my daughter Hannah's birthday, and we had everyone there. And it was lovely because it's a long old time not to give your... see your kids, you know, and it was kind of upsetting in a way, you know, but we've stayed positive with it.
Good. And deep question time. Have you learned anything about yourself over the last 3 months?
But you know what? I think everyone is forced into this kind of self-reflection.
Yes.
You know, even if you didn't want it. Now, I'm usually quite a reflective lad, but even from my own point of view, like I have a 7-year-old, and I swear to God, Ray, she's under my armpit day and night. Like, I'm literally like a child butler. I'm there to make sandwiches, do Zoom calls and homework, and what movie will we watch? And she's got atrocious taste in movies. You know, I'm just hanging out with her all the time. Yeah. But I've noticed how much she's enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I've enjoyed it quite a lot. And there's a slight part of me that thinks, geez, I don't think I've got this work-life balance quite right, you know.
Because you've seen how it could be, is that it?
Well, I don't know how realistic it is. I'd love to be at home with them all the time, you know, because they're great fun and they're fun ages, you know. But you got to go to work as well, and, you know, I've got bills and school fees and the rest of it that everyone else has. And it's hard, but I've definitely reassessed that, you know, I need to make some changes to be there a bit more. I suppose that's the main thing for me, you know. Yeah. It was real root stuff. I was saying to someone else, you could go to Tibet to go find yourself. And they'd say, right, no sport, no drink, no talking to your mates, not, you know. And it'd be the same. Do you know? Like, it's the same. You're just, even if you're busy with the kids all day long, once the evening comes and you sit down, you're kind of left in your own head a bit, and it's a lot of time to think, probably too much time for the normal Irish person, you know?
It was interesting, though. We had a lady on from the HSE last week talking about alcohol and all that, and we got a text from a guy who said that he would have been considered one of the drinkers in his town because he was in the pub all the time, but he wasn't a heavy drinker, and now he realised after 3 months without the pub that he wasn't going there for the drink at all. He was going there for the social interaction. That's why he was going.
Well, I don't drink. I knocked the booze on the head a couple of years back, and I miss the pub.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, I really do. I miss the crack, and I miss just seeing friends and socialising.
And have you done a Zoom call, a sort of with your mates, a sort of a social?
Yeah, we were trying to do it quite regularly there, and it was more just to connect with each other and have a bit of a laugh. And, you know, I know the lads were playing poker on it and stuff
all right.
like that.
How does that work?
I don't know. I don't get involved with them because they're a bunch of crooks and cheats. So I don't play any part of that.
I'd like to distance myself from that last remark.
Exactly. But it was staying in contact was kind of important. But for me, the personal thing was more that really core time with family. Like, I would have thought myself and Tanya would have killed each other, but we came out of it somehow, and we happened. We're all right, you know. Yeah. So that was a surprise for everyone. I think more than anything else.
Okay,
you know?
So it's a date Friday night. I'll bring my shaving gear in with me, and we'll see what happens. Okay, right.
But you're there with Zig and Zag, aren't you?
Yeah. I'll get Dustin to do it. He'll give you a good price on it. Right, Baz. Talk to you. See you
talk
on the night.
Talk to you soon, Ray. Right. Bye.
That's RTE Does Comic Relief, 8 o'clock on RTE1. This Friday night, and it's right through till 11:30 then. That's it from us. Mary Wilson is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday and stay safe.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.